a Library Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to Shh, a Library Podcast. I'm Andrea, children's librarian.
I'm Mel, also a children's librarian.
I'm Morgan, community outreach and events coordinator.
Woo! Second episode of the season. Awesome. We've got a good one for you guys today. And to start things off, I thought I'd change things up a little bit, and I have a riddle for you guys.
A riddle?
Yes. So put your thinking caps on.
Are secured. We secured?
You're secured.
Perfect. I took mine off a really long time ago.
I need you to find
it. I left that hat at home. Okay.
Just try your best for me, okay? Here's the riddle. What goes up but never goes down? Just think really hard about it.
Isn't it your age?
What do you think, Morgan?
Well, now that I have, now that you said that, now should I come up? Let me. No, I'll say age too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the correct answer.
Okay.
I asked the same riddle to my son like last week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like, okay, Thorin, what goes up but never goes down? And he thought about it and he said, balloon. And I was like, no. Rocket ship. No. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, I don't know what it is. Tell me what it is. And I was like, okay, well, how old are you? I'm 7. How old will you be after that? 8. How about after that? 9. Does your age ever go down? No. So then what's the answer? Oh, 10.
He's not wrong. He completed that pattern.
Yeah, because 10 is up from 9, yes, which that makes sense. But
It was next in the sequence.
It was next in the sequence, exactly. Kids just, he never ceases to entertain me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the other day, we were doing magic tricks. And I did a rope trick for him where you have the different size ropes, but you put them in your hand where they all look like they're the same size. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then you have him pull them one by one. So I had him do, you know, the longest one, the medium, and then the shortest one. And I was like, ta-da. And he said, where's the magic? So he's had me rolling with laughter this past week. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that'd be a nice little fun way to start the podcast and bring some laughter into your life.
Kids crack me up because like they're either gonna call you out on what you did wrong, like that wasn't as special as you think it was, or they're gonna try to make you feel like you really did, like they're like, oh, she was really excited about this. So my niece, she's 5, she does, you did it, sissy. Okay,
it sounds a little sarcastic.
Just
a
better little about bit. It's okay. It's okay.
Kids are brutally honest sometimes too. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, I get it. Like, I know you want to be honest and upfront, but sometimes you have to, you know, tone it down a little bit. Don't hurt my feelings.
My friend, kid, the other day, she said, good morning, Mason. And he said, good morning, old lady.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thorin's called me out like that before, too.
No. Vera Presley's called me old.
Has she?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then what did you say?
I argued and I said, I'm not old. good one. Like a person in their 30s should do. Argue with the 5-year-old.
Yep.
I'm not old. You're old.
I don't understand how people pick fights with kids. You're just not going to win.
You're not going to win with them.
I know. Or like the whole why phase.
Yeah.
Like you explain something, they're like, why? I'm like, well, because. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, because of this. Why? And it just keeps going and going and going. Mm-hmm. They're like the Energizer Bunny. It just never stops.
Yep.
But yeah, kids are fun, though. I enjoy being a children's librarian. I read a book.
It's your turn. It was your turn to read the book.
You did. You read it?
I read a book.
I'm so proud.
I know.
Of you.
And I have been waiting to talk about this book for so long. Mm-hmm. I have read this book before, so I reread it again. It's been a while since I've, you know, read it. So rereading it just made me realize how much I don't want to spoil it, but I do like this book. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this book I mentioned in the last podcast, I will be reviewing Whipping Boy, not to be confused by The Whipping Boy. It's a completely different book. So this is Whipping Boy by Alan Kurzweil. And this is basically a memoir. So it's a nonfiction for all you nonfiction lovers out there. Mm-hmm. And this is basically a story about Alan trying to find his childhood bully. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the great thing about this book is that it takes a turn, okay, mm-hmm. in the quest to find this bully. So let me explain to you kind of what goes on, how it leads up to the twist, and then I'll give you my rating. And then if you want to finish the book on your own and find out what happens after that, you know, feel free. We do have a digital copy of this book. So the author of this book is Alan Kurzweil, and he's an award-winning novelist, children's novelist, inventor, and journalist. Inventor of what, you ask? Well, I did some digging, and I when I say digging, I mean a general Google search. And so basically, the only thing that I could find is that he invented a STEM kit along with his son Max called Potato Chip Science.
Oh,
and basically
okay.
it comes with, like, you know, when you get chips in a canister, like Pringles, mm-hmm. not sponsored, and then, you know, like you get little fake potato chips, uh-huh. and, you know, a fake potato chip bag, uh-huh. and he gives you all these like circuits and stuff, and it has like a book that tells you all the different experiments that you can do with potato chips, huh. and the things that potato chips come in.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
Cute.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. Mm-hmm. So he's very much like into science and research and mm-hmm. all, and it you can tell from this book he put a lot of work into this book. Mm-hmm. So let me set up the situation or how it starts out. Basically, Alan went to a Swiss boarding school called mm-hmm. Eglon, and this is spelled Aiglon.
Oh,
yeah, okay. Eglon. So, and like I said, this is in Switzerland, mm-hmm. and he goes there around the age of 10. And so this school was established by this Englishman named, what was his name? John Corlett. So John Corlett was an interesting man. He wanted to be called JC, first of all. And he had a vision for his school where you basically went there to work on your mind, your body, and your spirit mm-hmm. In a fun way, he says. But basically, the school had a lot of rules and regulations. For example, you were given a weekly allowance, I guess, mm-hmm. of basically $1.25. And you could use that money however you wanted, but you were in charge of your own expenses. Like, if you wanted to buy a little snack, or if you wanted to play foosball, or if you were fined because you were walking in the hallway when you're not supposed to. So all of that came out of this allowance.
I got fined for walking
yes.
in the hall?
Yeah, just, you know, little things like, or you were up past curfew, yeah. or, and, you know,
this is
like
a very fun
school.
So, well, I'm just picturing this man who wants to be called, like, hey, just call yeah. me JC.
Yeah.
And, like, you can't see me right now, but, like.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Your little wiggle dance.
Like, the shoulders are, like, you know, yeah. like, you think of, like, a cool guy. Like,
yeah, he was cool. If you see a picture yeah. of this man, you'll think, yeah,
like,
that's
oh,
a cool
hey
happening
guys.
Dude.
I'm chill. Yeah, I'm going to start a fun school. Call me JC. Come on, we'll work on our spirit and our minds and our bodies. And he's like,
and
hey,
our fiscal
no
responsibility.
Running in the halls,
exactly.
Give me all of your allowance.
And he even, he made a rule that parents were not allowed to send their kids money. If they ever send money to them, the money would be confiscated and sent back. Like, do not send your kid money.
Wouldn't the smart thing to do be, if you're going to give them an allowance each mm-hmm. week, why mm-hmm. don't you keep it with their name on it and mm-hmm. they get part of that money each week?
He was very adamant on the fact that they didn't want any outside money coming in. Like, they wanted to be self-sufficient and okay. teach these kids a lesson that you just don't get money like that. Like, you have to earn your money and you have to learn how to spend your money. Okay. And yeah. So that kind of goes to show what kind of school this was. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in going to this school, if this sounds enticing to you to send your child here, it's still in existence.
Oh, it's JC still in charge?
He is not in charge.
Okay.
Book took place in, or when he went there was like 1971, and he was already much older, so he has since passed away.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously there's new staff and everything. Mm-hmm. But still the same philosophy is being taught at the school.
So it's basically like, you know, you always, like, you read in books or you see in a movie, like, don't make me send you to a boarding school in Switzerland.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like, it's like, at first you're like, oh, yeah, that sounds, send me to Switzerland. And mm-hmm. then you get there and it's like, nope. Yeah.
I mean, the scenery and everything was wonderful, but, I mean, the fact that the school was this strict and everything, I wouldn't feel comfortable sending my son there. But it was also, parents weren't aware of what was going on. Like, especially when Alan went there, he would always write his mom and say, hey, everything's going great. You know, I love school. And, like, kids don't want to be, like, upfront about it, I guess. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so, yeah, this school is still in existence if you're interested. It's very expensive, so depending on what grade level you're in, it could cost from 84,000 Swiss francs to 140,000 Swiss francs, which is roughly $95,000 to $160,000
per year. So college.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And, I mean, that includes room and board and a wonderful education and a weekly allowance. So it's worth it. It's worth it. Okay. So, yeah. So Alan went to this school in 1971. He was around 10 years old. And they had dorms and they had roommates. And he shared a room with four other kids. And one of those kids was a boy by the name of Cesar, is how it's pronounced, Augustus. Mm-hmm. And from the get-go, this kid was out to get Alan. Mm-hmm. And basically, Alan says that he was out to get him because Alan was one of the few Jewish boys in school. Mm. And so he became Cesar's target. Mm-hmm. He would call him nosy. He would put like his hand up to his nose to like elongate the nose and call him nosy.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so Alan just kind of put up with it because if he retaliated or said something, then he would bully him even harder. Mm-hmm. So basically he endured this for the entire school year of, you know, Cesar. So basically around that time, Jesus Christ Superstar was really popular. Mm-hmm. And there was a song from there called Trial Before Pilate. And there was a refrain or interlude there in that song called The 39 Lashes. And because the song referenced the name Cesar, Cesar really liked the song and took inspiration from this song. Oh. So basically what he did is they put on a little play in the room where they chose Alan to be Jesus Christ. And then, you know, they had him tied up. And then when the refrain came up, the 39 lashes, he went and took his belt and was giving Alan lashes. And so from then, Alan was just like, he was not happy. He was not having a good time. He had a really expensive watch that his dad had given him. And his dad had passed away and he was very young. Mm. And he would, whenever he'd have to go take a shower or go do like an excursion or whatever, he would put it under his pillow. And one day he went to look for it and it wasn't there. Mm. And apparently Cesar, this is what Alan thinks, Cesar got one of the roommates to toss it out of the window. And so and it had been snowing, so the ground was covered with snow, so he was never able to retrieve his watch. That's so sad. I know, it's really sad. Just reading that, you know, what Cesar did to Alan was just heart-wrenching, and I feel like it was really unnecessary. So basically, that's the premise. He was so traumatized by this experience that he just couldn't forget it for the rest of his life. And then when he got older, he decided, well, basically his wife was like, well, what do you think became of him? And that kind of got him wondering. So he leaves the school after a year and he goes, lives his life, becomes a journalist, meets the love of his life, is a French woman named Francois. I just love that name, Francois.
I didn't know that was a woman's name.
Yeah, so Francois. I mean, Francois. It just rolls right off the tongue. So they move to Paris together. And like I said, he's living his life. But this whole time, he just has Cesar in the back of his mind. Like, what is he up to? What's going on? So basically, he kind of starts on this journey to try and track him down because he cannot forget. He can't forget Cesar, so he feels he needs some closure. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he uses his journalist superpower, yeah, however you want to put it, to start the process. The first thing he does is he goes straight to the school to talk to the staff that's there. And there was actually one of the staff members who had been there when he was a student there. Oh, wow. And he went to her and asked her, do you remember this student? And she's like, no, that name doesn't ring a bell, but let me give you the alumni files that I have for that year. So he basically takes that home and he has an address and you know, his name on there. And the address is a place in the Philippines. So he was Filipino. And so he doesn't have a phone number. So he decides to track down this phone number. And back then, they didn't have internet. So he goes, where? To the
Philippines.
Library.
Yeah, library. He could have gone there, hey, too.
You had your thinking cap on during the riddle. I've since put mine on.
I thought maybe he took a trip to the Philippines
to find him.
That's also valid. That's also very valid. But he goes, so he goes to the library and he, with his research skills, is able to find a phone number. And he calls the phone number and he chickens out and just hangs up. And he's like, nope, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. So he kind of puts this on the back burner, basically. You know, Francois and him have a kid, have a boy, a baby boy, and they're busy raising him and everything. But then when his son Max gets a little bit older and his son Max starts to question him, like, did you have a bully? And, you know, because his son starts to get bullied in school. And so it kind of reignites his curiosity about what has happened to Cesar. So basically, he then goes to a, this is after. So the early 2000s, there was something wonderful called the internet. And so he does a Google search and he comes up with a lot of different Cesar Augustus profiles and information and links and stuff. And he goes through all of this and he thinks he has it narrowed down. He finds, I believe he's like a rich mogul guy. And then he looks at the birthday and it's like, no, it doesn't align. So basically that was a bust. So a few years after that, he goes to this research institution and he goes through just files and files and files of newspapers and magazines trying to find anything that he could about this Cesar. And he comes across something interesting. Okay. So he comes across this New York Post article called Night Falls as Feds Bust Up a Royal Ripoff. And so, basically, this article explained that there was a trio of Americans that were busted after swindling about $4 million from investors by posing as fake European royalty. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they posed as a sham investment house called Badish Trust Consortium. Mm-hmm. And it consisted of a German prince mm-hmm. in quotation mm-hmm. marks, by the name of Prince Robert von Badish, Baron, and then there was Baron Moncrief, and then the third was Colonel Sherry. And so basically what they would do is it was an advance fee scheme, and they would tell people or bring people in who were desperate for loans, like huge, like millions, mm-hmm. billions of dollar mm-hmm. quantity loans. Mm-hmm. And they would promise them the loan for an advance fee. Mm-hmm. And then they yes. would not follow through with right. the loan, obviously. Right. Mm-hmm. But they went to great lengths to trick people into yes. doing this. Like they had like a lawyer that they also tricked that would help them with documents and to look legit, mm-hmm. basically. And so he finds this article, he thinks it's interesting, and then he happens across one of the names of one of the suspects. And who do you think it is?
Caesar
Augustus. So he thinks that this is his guy. Mm-hmm. But you have to read the rest of the book to figure out if it is.
Great.
And what happens with this trial, this case.
Oh. So how, like, up till now, mm-hmm. like, up till what you just told us, how long yeah. has he been looking for him? Like, how much time did he commit?
Yeah, so he left the school 1972.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
When he finds this article, it is now 2005.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he kind of started the actual research part of it in 1991. But wow. it took mm-hmm. him from, like, you know, off and on between 91 and 2005 to actually find something in 2005.
Yeah. Okay.
And though, so from there, he takes that information and he has people in the business that he, you know, hookups, I guess you want to call mm-hmm. them, that he can ask.
Sources.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sources. I'm a librarian. I know that word.
You're not a journalist.
I'm not a journalist. No, but we know sources.
Yeah.
So he has different people that he contacts, and he is able to eventually track down the vast amounts of documents pertaining to this case. And I'm talking like 14 boxes just full of stuff.
Wow.
So basically the rest of the book is him going through all this material, interviewing people who are associated with the mm-hmm. trial, and figuring out if this in fact is his guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as you can see, it starts off, you know, innocently enough as this guy who was bullied mm-hmm. and he wants to find
yeah.
his, he wants to find this person. Mm-hmm. And then it comes to
True crime.
That
was because when you told me about the book, like very briefly, I did not expect a true crime twist.
Exactly. No, exactly. Yeah. So I sincerely love this book. I mm-hmm. recommend this book to everyone that I know who enjoys nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And the feedback that I get is pretty positive from this book.
Where is it? Like, what's the, do you know the call number? Like, what is it in, like, biographies or memoirs? Or like, is it, it's not in true crime, is it?
No, it's not in true crime. It's a memoir, basically. Okay. So that's where you would find it. We used to have a physical copy of this book. Mm-hmm. We do have a digital version of this book. So it's easily accessible, website or Libby, mm-hmm. however you want to do it. But I definitely recommend this read. Because, like I said, I mean, the people that they fooled with this, I mean, they mm-hmm. got the attention of Liza Minnelli.
Oh, my gosh.
They got the attention of Sammy Davis Jr. Hmm. You know, so there's some, you know, well-known people that are attached to this case. Hmm. And I had never, this sounds like a high profile case, but I had never heard of it before until I read this book. And then I started digging into it and I was like, wow, this is crazy. Mm-hmm.
Well, it makes me think of those like Nigerian prince
scams. Exactly. And these guys would dress to the nines to try and they would get expensive hotel suites to lure people in and be like, look, you know, this is a legit agency, a legit consortium, and we have lots of money. And they were saying they had upwards of $60 billion in different accounts and investments. And so it was like this whole thing. And he basically delves deep into this case and everything that they did and all the evidence. And so like I said, this book was such a joy to read the first time, and still even more so the second time, because I had forgotten a few details and stuff like that. But I really, really enjoyed this book.
My question is, what kind of journalism, do you know what kind of journalism he was doing before he wrote this?
I'm not 100% sure. He started out as a journalist, but then he quickly turned into an author.
Oh, okay.
And he wrote children's novels, and he even wrote a book. Mm-hmm. I believe Leon, I'd have to look it up, but there was this character in one of his books called Leon, and he had a bully in the book, and he modeled the bully after Cesar. And so, you know, he kind of went that way, and now he's an inventor of potato chip science. And so he's kind of had his hand in a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
So he's an interesting guy.
It's interesting enough that I'm like, I might dip my toe into nonfiction for my own
exactly. purposes. See, nonfiction can be really, really interesting, and you can't make stuff like this up.
Yeah.
I feel like nonfiction also can be just as interesting as fiction, which is why I love nonfiction.
Yes.
So I'm going to go ahead and give my shushy rating. Okay. I think I've talked on and on about this book, and I would
without
really
giving
like
anything away.
Yeah. I mean, at least I gave the lead up to that. And so my shushy rating for this book is going to be a 4.8 out of 5.
Wow.
Okay.
I mean, you've read it enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've read it twice now, and I feel like I could still read it again.
Yeah.
It's every time I read it, I find something new or I pick up on something new. And so I highly recommend this book. If you want to figure out what happens with this trial, if he in fact does find his Cesar and if he does confront him, please check out Whipping Boy by Alan Kurzweil. You will not regret it.
Looking for a job? The Garland Libraries have you covered. Our highly recommended research database, A to Z, has now partnered with Monster.com to provide an optimal job search experience. Start your search in the database by using keywords or location, and Monster.com will provide a list of the best options for you. Applying for jobs has never been easier. This database and search option are available free of charge. All you need is your Garland Library card. You can easily access the A to Z database through the Garland Library's website, www.library.garlandtx.gov. Just click on Online Resources and scroll down until you see the A to Z database. Start your job search with us today.
¿Busca un trabajo? Las bibliotecas Garland lo tienen cubierto. Nuestra base de datos de investigación, altamente recomendada de A to Z, o sea, A a Z, se ha asociado con Monster.com para proporcionar una experiencia de búsqueda de empleo óptima. Comience su búsqueda en la base de datos utilizando palabras clave o ubicación y Monster.com le proporcionará una lista de las mejores opciones para usted. Solicitar empleo nunca ha sido tan fácil. Esta base de datos y la opción de búsqueda están disponibles de forma gratuita. Todo lo que necesita en su tarjeta de las bibliotecas Garland. Puede acceder fácilmente a la base de datos A to Z a través del sitio web de las bibliotecas Garland. Simplemente haga clic en Recursos en línea y desplácese hacia abajo hasta que vea la base de datos A to Z. también está disponible en español. Comience su búsqueda de trabajo con nosotros hoy.
So last time, if you listened to our previous episode, we played a Mad Libs, like a classic novel Mad Libs, and we acted out a scene from Pride and Prejudice, which I enjoyed so much.
Mm-hmm. It was so much fun.
It was so much fun. Mm-hmm. So we decided to stick to the classic theme, and today we are going to find out what classic novel character we are.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we have this quiz by Penguin Random House, and you'll never guess what the title is. It's called, Which Classic Character Are You?
Wow.
Yeah. So if you want to, yeah, if you want to search for it, just type that in and it'll come up. So awesome. Basically, we're going to go through these questions mm-hmm. at the same time, mm-hmm. give our own honest answers.
Okay.
And then at the end, we'll compare, you know, what classic mm-hmm. character we are.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So we will take turns reading the questions. Is that okay
yeah.
with you guys? Mm-hmm. Okay. Morgan, do you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to read the question and the choices.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
All right. You lend one of your favorite books to a friend. It is returned with a cracked spine, dog-eared pages, and chicken-scratched marginalia. Do you address this issue? No. Who cares? What's one book between old friends? No, I wouldn't say a thing, but I will be annoyed about it for the rest of the day. Yes, I would express my disappointment right away in a calm manner. Yes, I would use humor to ease any tension. Faulty premise. You're presuming I would lend a book to anyone.
I
like these choices.
I'm a mix of some of these.
Right.
Okay.
See, that's what I always find with these quizzes mm-hmm. is they have so many options, but mm-hmm. I feel like I fall between two or three of them. I'm like, why don't you have one where yeah. it's like I feel mm-hmm. all of these or I feel a few of these.
I'm the same, but I thought, okay, if Andrea borrowed a book from me
uh-huh.
and she gave it back to me ruined.
Yeah. What would you mm. do?
I said, yes, I would use humor to ease any tension. Because
okay.
I would totally be like, ooh,
yeah. mm-hmm.
I see a dog-eared some pages there.
Yeah. do you just want this one?
Well, I just enjoyed it so much
mm-hmm.
that,
yeah.
you know, it got good use.
Exactly.
I think I would have to take some time before I could address it with humor. I will lend books, but like...
So you're going to be
I would express my disappointment right away in a... it says right away. Oh, man, now I need to... I don't know.
Oh, you put in the answer and it...
Well, I checked that one, but I forgot that okay. it said right away.
Oh, I see.
I would have to take some time.
Do we want to say our answers?
I guess so.
Okay. Yeah. So okay. I would say yes. I would express my disappointment right away in a calm manner.
Okay.
Okay.
Mel's so taking some time.
She's going to take
I'm
some time.
I'm going to like tell you, but I'm going to yeah. make you,
you're gonna make
you
laugh
about
make
it.
Make me yeah. laugh about it.
And then
this book is so ruined.
And Andre will be very calm.
You owe me money.
All right, I'll read the next question.
Okay.
Your favorite living author walks past you on the sidewalk. How do you react? Although I would limit myself... This is a bad sentence. I think it just should be...
I would.
I would limit myself to a quick wave and a smile.
Mm-hmm.
I'd keep on walking because that is how I would like to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
I would shake their hand and say, I enjoy your work and go on with my day. I would politely ask for a photo and an autograph. Why would I even stop? I don't care about the author. I care about their work.
Mm. See, with this one, the option, I would shake their hand. How do you go about doing that? You just go up to them and put your hand in the general vicinity and just...
Haven't you seen any social media lately?
What?
Yeah.
Do you treat them the way people are? Taylor.
Yeah. Oh. I I would politely ask for a photo and an autograph, because I have done that not with my favorite author, but with a favorite singer, where I was at the venue before he was before he was going to play, and I ran into him outside, and my hands were shaking, but I did ask for a photo and an autograph.
Nice. I don't have the courage to do that. I am afraid of rejection, so I feel like I would just do a quick wave and a smile and then walk away mad at myself. I don't see that option, but I'll add that in. I would give a quick wave and a smile and walk away mad at myself and go cry in a corner. So that's my answer.
Okay. I would probably do the quick wave and a smile, because knowing me, my facial recognition abilities would just completely
disappear.
Just disappear at that moment. Sure. And it would be somebody that is not nowhere near the person that
Yeah. I've seen those videos where, you know, people are walking around like they look like the person, and then people go up to them, and I would be so embarrassed if it wasn't them.
I would question it up until, like, I would just question it too hard that I would be like,
All right. So that was that's a good one. All right. I'll read the next one. Inexplicably, your favorite dead author walks past you on the sidewalk. How do you react? I would engage them in conversation because I don't see a downside. I would follow the author respectfully to find out how they are here. I would see if they needed anything, since being dislocated in time would be difficult. I would leave them alone, as nothing good can come from being curious. Or I would share my love for their work and say how good they look for their age.
Like, okay, so we know that they're dead, right?
Right.
Yes, we are knowingly walking past this dead
essentially
person.
A ghost.
Oh, wow. And I don't think I would follow them.
Even if they were just walking to a graveyard. Or,
right. Yeah. And they don't see a downside?
How do you follow someone respectfully? Like,
at
that's,
I don't know, at a respectful distance?
At a respectful distance, I guess. But you're still following them.
Anytime they...
Yeah, or just around a corner so they don't, you know, suspect anything. And then
it's a tailing mission.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
I really would see if they need anything, since being dislocated in time is a little
is a little difficult. I'd agree with
that. I'd be afraid that they were gonna, like, I don't know, like, latch onto my soul, suck me into my TV when I got home, and like, I'd just be. I think I would leave them alone.
That's my answer. I would leave them alone.
I've seen Poltergeist. I know how this works.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Go ahead, Morgan.
You absentmindedly open a package that was addressed to your neighbor and discover a highly sought-after first edition. Do you return the package?
Ooh.
Yes, I would return the package with a note of explanation and a bottle of wine. Yes, I would return the package and explain the misunderstanding in person. Yes, I would repackage the book and leave the box on their doorstep. Yes, I would return the package along with an invitation to talk it out over tea.
Okay.
No, my dilemma is whether to sell it or enjoy having it when they don't.
It would genuinely, for me, depend on the book. Because
Mel? No. Wow. I was just going to ask, I would like to meet the person who would choose that one. I just want to know what
Mel,
is going on in their mind.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a book that I really, really want, and then maybe, but like, I mean,
Do you know the neighbor?
See, I don't know my neighbor. That's the other thing, is I don't know my neighbors. So like,
I am going to be honest about it. Because I'm a good girl.
Okay.
And I would say, yes, I would return the package and explain the misunderstanding in person.
Yeah.
And then maybe if they're okay about it, I would be like, can you let me borrow it?
So sometimes after, so you can dog ear the pages and crack the spine?
I only do that to your books, okay. Morgan.
Yes.
I mean, the one that makes me laugh is like, return it with a note and a bottle of wine. Right, I'm like, you're the one that's getting this first edition highly sought after book, and now I'm going to give you a bottle of wine to go with it? Like,
no. That plenty of people accidentally open up packages that are not theirs. You don't even have to explain it. Mm-hmm. You could just put it back on their doorstep.
I think I would put it back on their doorstep. I think I would repackage it and leave the box on their doorstep.
Okay. Yeah, I think, I mean, like I said, it would depend on the book, but most likely I would return it to them.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad that you have some integrity.
I have a little bit.
Okay. Your best friend reveals that they wrote a novel. You're the first to read it and you hate it. How do you respond? Ooh. I try to solve this conflict by focusing my praise on my friend's dedication. I'd ask if they'd like my help. If so, I'd offer critiques. If not, I'd let it go. I'd express my excitement and focus on the importance of editing. I tell them how much I love their book. I'm still their biggest fan. I'd be honest and enjoy watching hope drain from their eyes. Wow.
So I'm stuck between asking if they'd like my help and I'd offer critiques, or express my excitement and focus on the importance of editing, because like I enjoy editing people's writing.
Yeah.
I think I'll go with express my excitement and focus on the importance of editing, because I do enjoy that part.
Yeah. I feel like I would want to combine the first and second option, because I would say I would praise them on completing the project, like make them feel good about it, but then also offer my help. Like if you ever feel like you need a second eye or another look over, just let me know. So I would essentially do both, but if I had to choose one, I would do express my excitement and focus on the importance of editing, I guess. I'll do that one.
Which is not either of the two that you said originally.
No, I'd express my excitement, which is praising them on their dedication. Okay. And then
it's basically a combination.
Okay. It's kind of a combo.
I'd try to solve this conflict by focusing on my praise and my friend's dedication. Nice. My gosh, that's a lot of pages. Good for you. I could never do that.
Sorry, I just read the next question.
Oh, no. Oh, what is the next one? Morgan, read it, please.
You discover that a family member has been stealing books from the library. They inform you that they are only taking books that haven't been checked out recently. How do you react?
How do you know? You don't know. Unless you work there, you don't know.
Okay.
As long as no one else is reading them, I'd have them grab a couple for me.
What?
I would insist that they return the books in person, no ifs, ands, or buts. I'd express my disappointment and have them promised to not do it again. I would convince them that they have a moral duty to return the books. I'd persuade them to make an anonymous donation to the library for the double the value.
What?
Oh.
So what are they? So they're just stealing them.
They're stealing. So they're just stealing them.
To keep them. Okay.
They're only taking the ones that haven't been checked out recently.
Again, I ask. How do you know?
How do they know?
Yes.
Unless you're an accomplice.
I mean, you could
and you're
be.
Telling them.
So in this scenario, I think we have to take our librarian brains out of it.
Yeah.
I cannot.
Oh, I know.
Take off your librarian cap and let's say
that there's a cart out that says last chance and they're like, oh, people aren't checking these out. Yeah. So I'm going to take these. That's how they know.
I'm going to choose. I'd express my disappointment and have them promise not to do it again.
Okay. If they're a family member, I have no problem being upfront with them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I would say I would insist that they return the books in person. No ifs, ands, or buts. Oh.
I would convince them that they have a moral duty mm-hmm. to return the books.
I could, yeah.
That's another good one, too.
Wow. Okay.
So we now have our answers, and we're already giggling.
I'm David Copperfield.
Wow. I'm David Copperfield.
Dun, dun, imposter.
I'm Mr. Knightley. Oh.
From Emma? Oh yes. My gosh, I love that.
I love it.
Well, okay.
I don't disagree.
No?
No.
Okay. What? Why? Why do you say
know.
That? Do you want to read your a little bit of your blurb?
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Your ability to think clearly and sensibly combined with your discerning common sense.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Anybody who knows me is listening, just meanwhile, this pretend.
One. Oh, helps you to get to the crux of any issue. While you are honest, you're not honest to a fault. You know,
okay.
I'm not gonna disagree. Yeah. I'm not gonna disagree.
Meanwhile, ours starts with, while some people might call you naive.
Okay.
Your idealism and honesty are very rare gifts. You know the world can be a tough place, but you don't let that stop you from seeking out the good where you can find it.
I agree. Okay. I am an optimist.
I love it.
Yes. I don't think I've ever read David Copperfield, though.
I haven't either. All I know it is from, a reference to, an old, Homestar Runner mm-hmm. video. It's like, I'm David Copperfield.
Yeah. But maybe I want to read it because, I mean, if I am David Copperfield, I'd like to read my memoir.
It's by Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
I don't really like Charles Dickens. I don't think I'm going to read this book.
Darl's Chickens.
I don't know. Emma's one of my favorite, mm-hmm. especially I loved the newest one. And I don't think.
Me too.
I think, I had my sister watch it mm-hmm. and she just didn't really like it. But I have now watched it so many times.
It's so good.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I didn't think I would. I mm-hmm. usually am against watching newer
yeah.
remakes of things that I mm-hmm. already know I like. And mm-hmm. example, Willy Wonka. I will always favor the first Willy Wonka. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I don't like the later ones, but mm-hmm. I just like that one more. Yeah. But I really like this one.
Did you ever see the mini series with Romola Garai and Johnny Lee Miller? Mm-hmm. I love that one.
But they're
both very, very good, both that one and the new Emma.
I will watch any adaptation of mm-hmm. Jane Eyre, Pride and Prejudice, mm-hmm. and Emma.
I love Sense and Sensibility.
With Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman. Oh my gosh.
I mm-hmm. have that on VHS.
Oh, yes.
And I will rewatch that thing. That VHS has been used.
Alan it's Rickman's performance in that movie is mm-hmm. Me and my sister are obsessed with that movie because he it's his character, Colonel Brandon, is the ideal man.
I know. But yeah, I love Sense and Sensibility. Okay, well, that was fun.
Yes.
I learned about myself today. I didn't know that I was honest and that mm-hmm. I was a man.
And also naive.
And naive.
I'm kind of honest.
Yeah.
And not honest to a fault. But I have common sense.
That wraps up our episode today. Morgan, you will be reading the next book, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, I will. So I can tell you I'm going to be doing surprise, mm-hmm. a romance.
Oh.
I know.
Who would have guessed?
I know. I can't. Can't make it up. So we've done fiction, kind of fantasy-ish.
Mm-hmm.
We've done nonfiction, mm-hmm. very serious.
Yeah.
And now we're going to do some historical romance fiction.
Ooh, nice.
I love historical romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't say too much about it right now because okay. I do need to have some things to talk about for the next episode.
Sure.
But so I don't know if anybody is obsessed with the Bridgerton series as I am Netflix. Anybody? Anybody in this room?
I've seen clips.
Okay. Clips. Andrea?
I know about the craze. Okay. But yeah.
My sister and I are obsessed.
Okay.
So I had read the Bridgerton books before mm-hmm. the series, it ever was thought to be a TV series. So I figure with the new season coming out in, I think it's May. I think the first half is May, maybe the second half is July. We may have to shift some months after I look that up. Mm-hmm. But I figured I would do Romancing Mr. Bridgerton, which is Colin and Penelope's story. So I'll try not to give too much away.
Okay.
It's starting in the middle. This is number 4 in the series.
Okay.
So it's not the beginning, but I could do a quick recap.
Yeah.
For you next month.
I look forward to your version of it, your retelling of so I don't have to watch it.
Wow. Okay. Well, by the time I get done, you'll run straight home
and watch it.
Watch it.
And watch it. Thank you. All right. Mm-hmm. On that note, bye everyone.
Bye.
Bye guys.
Bye.
A library podcast.